Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening to AFR on this Monday, October the 28th. Ed Battagliano joins me. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And was that your best, Lou, what was the name of that guy on Mary Tyler Moore?
Oh, no.
Ted Baxter.
I can do that better.
Well, that was a good, that was pretty
Hello,
good.
Hello, Mayor. Lou.
Not a bad, that was good. Yeah. That was an 8.5, I think, out of 10 on your Ted Baxter scale.
Ted Baxter here. So listen, I could keep going all
too
day.
Too much of a good thing, though, you know, can ruin it. I think, Ed, you might want to take that into consideration. Chris Woodward joins us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So your boss, Fred Jackson's out and away.
Still take a Canadian vacay.
He was trying to make an NHL team, I heard. So he needed,
yeah.
He needed the tryout time.
He actually played hockey.
He did.
Yeah.
But
he
did. Doesn't everybody in Canada? That's not saying
true.
A lot.
That's like saying, hey, he played basketball.
Right.
I was in fifth grade.
I was trying to think of a team name that would go with Newfoundland. I don't know.
The Newfoundland Hounds.
There you go. There you go.
All right. We appreciate you listening to AFR. Ed, tell folks how they can enrich themselves.
Thank you, Tim. That'll be the last one, I promise.
Sure it will.
You can, folks, if you would like to see us,
right.
What we look like today, you can go to either Facebook or YouTube and search for Today's Issues. Click through and you will see the live stream of this here program.
And the stories we mentioned.
Yes, on Facebook only. I don't think we can post stories on YouTube. But if you watch us on Facebook, Brent Creeley, our producer, posts the stories. So you want to read more, get a little more information, you can click on those as well.
Yeah, so YouTube, Facebook, live stream, and join the others who are watching there.
Yes.
Today's Issues. We appreciate all the folks who go to YouTube or to Facebook. All right, Chris, good morning to you. And
good morning.
What's happening in this big wide world of ours?
Well, this here is a show called Today's Issues.
Uh-huh.
And something that's going on today is the issue of President Donald John Trump making his first presidential visit to the city of Chicago. He's going to be meeting with a co-owner for the Chicago Cubs, meeting some other Republican donors, things of that sort. It also comes amid, I think we're on week 6 of this impeachment inquiry. If you want to be fancy about it, there's an ongoing teacher strike up there in Chicago. And, of course, there's other stuff going on in the news. But, you know, Chicago has been known as a place with a lot of violence, a lot of gun violence, crimes, murders, deaths, gangs, things like that. And I want to begin with some sound because I noticed USA Today was quick to point this out today when they were mentioning the president was going to be in Chi-Town. Back in 2017, President Trump was talking to ABC, and he talked about how bad the violence is in Chicago. Clip 1.
Chicago is like a war zone. Chicago is worse than some of the people that you report and some of the places that you report about every night.
So I will
in the Middle East.
Now, I don't know whether or not he's going to really get into these issues or whatnot, but certainly a lot of people are going to be playing this clip throughout today. That was back when the president was trying to offer a lot of support for police officers, law enforcement, things like that. Here we are 2 years later. There's still problems.
So what's
with
he going there
Chicago.
For?
It's for
fundraiser?
More or less an election type issue, yeah. But, you know, it's one of the issues that people are
because Chicago's
about.
Not in question.
No.
I think Chicago's going to go Democrat. Don't you, Ed?
Yeah, it's not in play.
Yeah, I don't think. So he's going there for a fundraiser.
Going there for a fundraiser, yes, sir.
Gotcha. And he is killing it, raising money. I don't know what the totals are, but the president and the,
well, I think he's got – $300 million for himself or something here, hasn't he?
It's been a lot. He's raised more than the other, you know, the people trying to unseat him. For sure.
You're not talking about his own personal.
Yeah, I think he's a fundraising machine. Whoever he's mm-hmm.
No, but he's raising money from others, not himself.
Yes, when
that's what you're saying.
When he's going state to state, he's,
and they're setting a lot of I don't know if it's records or not, but for small donors,
mm-hmm.
which is a key sign of support among the general populace. It'll be interesting to see how much money he raises, but he is, as I say, killing it so far. And they'll use that money because they have to buy ads and so forth and so on.
And I don't necessarily disagree with his take on Chicago.
It is.
It's almost 450 people have been shooting deaths mm-hmm. in Chicago this year.
Right.
That's a ton. I mean, it's a little bit of hyperbole compared to, war zones, but, that's...
Well, war zones have war going on.
So. Yes, I know. That's right.
We're just talking about walking down the street
that's
here.
That's true.
In Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of people, even people who aren't Trump supporters. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people disagreeing who live in Chicago who are, probably always...
I wish I knew. I wonder in Chicago, is this relegated basically to one area of town where most all this happens? You know what I'm saying? It's probably...
Like Birmingham?
It's probably unfair to say Chicago... Because most people don't live in these areas where these...
Right. I would agree that's the case.
Yeah. That's probably true about any big city and the crime rate. You're going to have a lot more crime in areas that are, I don't know how to describe them, but, no employment, rundown housing.
Everybody who lives there knows don't go there.
Yes. Right. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
All right. What did you say?
Well, I did. I failed to mention ago the president is going to be speaking at a gathering of law enforcement today in that area. So
okay. And the Chicago police chief was not going to be there because for some reason he didn't agree with something the president said or something. I don't know. I just saw that.
Okay.
But the president will be in our fair city of Tupelo, Mississippi on Friday. Did you know this?
Yes.
He's going to be here. In fact, Air Force One will be landing as the bird flies within 2 miles of where we're broadcasting from.
Right.
I don't know that in my lifetime we've had two presidents.
You haven't.
Visit the same area in such a
two
short
presidential.
Time.
Yeah.
H.W. Bush spoke at the graduation at Mississippi State University in 1990. Reagan came to Northport, Tuscaloosa, Alabama back in the 80s. As a matter of fact...
You know Alabama and Mississippi are two different states, right, Chris?
Yes, sir. Well, twin states, twin states. We were all one territory at one time until they had to have their way.
Yeah, they wanted their own football team. That was the deal.
I'm not better.
And the rest is history.
It could have been ours.
Yeah. So anyway, the president will be coming. He's coming to support the Republican candidate for governor here in our state, Tate Reeves, because we have a gubernatorial election a week from tomorrow. So that's what that's about. But it'll be interesting. We'll be able to go to one of these Trump rock star rallies.
It's going to be my first one.
Yeah.
I don't know who's
the opening act. Is Led Zeppelin or who is the opening act? We don't know.
This one of those deals. I got a ticket. I get a ticket for my son. My son and I are going, and it is. I told him. I said, "This is a. I know it's probably going to be a long line waiting to get in, and it's just. But it's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah. And so the president will be here. I don't know where else he's going this week, but again, I tell you something. Just from a stamina. I don't see how a 40-year-old man would be able to keep up this pace that this man follows day after day after day. Again, who knows if he sleeps or not, or if he just changes red ties every other day. But it's just amazing to me how he's able to keep going. And with all the attacks he gets on a daily basis, from the left, the press, and then also from sometimes inside the Republican Party, which leads us to the big story besides the president going to Chicago, and that is there was a big win for the president and our country on the international scene, right, Chris?
Yes, there was a raid in the Middle East over the weekend, and the leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi is his, hyphenated last name.
Al-Baghdadi. Okay.
He is dead. And the president took to the nation's television airwaves to announce the death, clip 2.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS.
the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration. U.S. Special Operations Forces executed a dangerous and daring nighttime raid in northwestern Syria and accomplished their mission in grand style. The U.S. personnel were incredible. I got to watch much of it. No personnel were lost in the operation, while a large number of Baghdadi's fighters and companions were killed with him.
Now, I can go into detail. I have about another 55 seconds here of al-Baghdadi's last moments, if you guys would like to hear that as well.
I haven't heard this.
Okay.
Or what are we about to hear?
The president basically says he died like a coward. Clip three.
The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. We were in the compound for approximately 2 hours, and after the mission was accomplished, we took highly sensitive material and information from the raid, much having to do with ISIS, origins, future plans, things that we very much want. Baghdadi's demise demonstrates America's relentless pursuit of terrorist leaders and our commitment to the enduring and total defeat of ISIS and other terrorist organizations.
Now, unfortunately, Baghdadi took he took his life, but he took the lives of three of his children there. He detonated a suicide vest to blow himself up so that way he would not be killed by members of the U.S. military.
I thought in the eyes of a jihadi, you wanted to be killed by the enemy because then you die a martyr.
Many
I know you're not an expert
on
this, Chris. I'm just asking.
Yes. I'm Baptist. I have no idea what they
okay.
I don't believe what they believe. I can confirm that without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, yeah, unless he, in his twisted mind, unless he was thinking he was going to take some U.S. soldiers with him.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know the details.
Several of his kids alive.
Yeah.
That's what's weird about it. I think
but the bottom line is that the United States got their man with this guy who is the leader and the founder of ISIS. And so that's a big deal. This is akin to taking out Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, right?
Right.
And so the president and the president deserves credit, but the people who deserve the most credit are the special forces.
In this case, was Army Delta Force.
It was Army Delta Force, who, President Obama deserved credit when we found bin Laden.
Right.
But we all know that the hard work was done by the special forces again.
Right.
This is not to diminish the role of the commander-in-chief who has to say go, right?
Right.
And
if it goes badly,
it's on
the president is blamed.
Right. Right. So we do, while you do give President Obama credit, you do also give President Trump credit for this. Now, I'm sure the Democrats agree, Chris. Right. I mean, they're fair-minded people, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
CNN so had a story today.
So play those sound bites, Chris.
Okay.
If you would, I'm sure they're easy to find.
CNN did have a story today saying most of the 2020 Democrats, the people running for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination, have refrained from crediting Trump over the death of Baghdadi. One of the other things that people are making a stink about today, or trying to, is the fact that the president didn't inform Speaker Pelosi and other high-ranking Democrats in Congress about the raid, what they were intending to do, and the president did field some questions about that. We're going to do clip four here, Brent.
Well, we've notified some. Others are being notified now as I speak. We were going to notify him last night, but we decided not to do that because Washington leaks like I've never seen before. There's no
country in the world that leaks like we do. And Washington is a leaking machine. And I told my people we will not notify them until our great people are out, not just in, but out. I don't want to have them greeted with firepower like you wouldn't believe. So we were able to get in. It was top secret. It was kept. There were no leaks, no nothing. The only people that knew were the few people that I dealt with.
Put that on a bumper sticker. Washington leaks like nowhere else.
Right.
Leaking machine.
There you go.
No, the president's under no constitutional obligation to inform anybody, I guess, except, you know, I mean, he's ultimately responsible. So if it goes bad, as Ed said, it's on him too. But, you know, let me just say this. You said you can't find, as of this morning, any compliments from the Democratic presidential candidates for the president or this.
Correct. Okay. I had not seen any.
Okay. Have you looked for them?
After our meeting, audio.
Okay. I'm making a point here.
Okay.
I'm making a point. If that's true, and that the Democrat presidential candidates have not complimented the president on this, and or at least said something positive, that proves the president's point, why he didn't tip off Nancy Pelosi or any of the other Democrats on this, because they can't even give him credit for something like this, which he's deserving of, as I said earlier, as President Obama was deserving of when he said go on Bin Laden.
And we did credit him when it
happened. He got compliments from Republicans.
Yeah.
At the time. And so they hate this guy so much, the Democrats, that they won't even credit him. So it's blinding their sense of reason.
Right.
Okay. So that's, you don't tip Adam Schiff off on something like this prior to it happening.
And I'll tell you something I had not thought of, that the president said we were not going to risk our special forces going in or coming out. If you leak it too early, they're trying to get out. You don't want to let the rest of the world know and the rest of ISIS know there are American special forces trying to get out of North
Syria.
That's
true, Ed. True, Ed. Anyway, I better stop right there. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. So the ISIS founder and leader in Syria, who had the caliphate going there for a while, for a year or two, he's dead. So next story.
Well, I want to keep it
related.
This real
quick. Is it related?
This
to?
Is in related news. Steve picked up on this, brought it in, and he'll follow up with it today.
Steve Jordahl.
Yes, Steve Jordahl. The Washington Post, I'm sure you guys have seen this. The Washington Post, in their coverage of al-Baghdadi's demise, they had this headline: austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State dies at 48.
Yeah, that was outrageous.
Yeah, and it's the Washington Post. Now, you know, certainly there, we've had fine farewells, if you want to call them that, from the New York Times about other people. You know, it was several weeks ago, but it was like the anniversary of Mao Zedong's death, and the New York Times basically was like, you know, he was this great man that people, you know, have fond memories of, when in fact he murdered many people who didn't agree
according
with him.
To the USA Today story, which I got linked off Drudge, they say the original headline in the Washington Post said Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, probably didn't get that correct, but anyway, Islamic State's terrorist-in-chief dies at 48.
We did see a discussion about discrepancies in the headlines. We were discussing,
but it was changed. According to the USA Today, the Washington Post headline was changed to what you said, which is austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State dies at 48. What do you think's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, because he's not just an austere religious scholar. That's what an absurd description. Do you have some of the tweets and posts that mocked the Washington Post? While you're looking for that,
I will.
It'll show how ridiculous it is. This is This is calling a terrorist and a murderer a religious scholar. Now, whatever else he may have been is overshadowed by the fact that this was the head of one of the most despicable right. terrorist organizations in world history. And if USA Today is correct that the original headline was changed to something almost nondescript, it says dies at 48. He might as well have died of natural causes as much as that headline reveals.
And you'd never know he's a terrorist.
You'd never know he was a terrorist unless you knew who al-Baghdadi was.
Yeah. What this is the mocking tweets about this. Again, this is like, you remember the New York Times? Was it during 9/11? Recently, with the commemoration of 9/11, they talked about
how planes flew into the buildings.
Planes flew into the building. Never mentioning who the terrorists were or anything like that.
Right.
This is a couple things going on here. By the way, the New York Times and the Washington Post, probably the two largest newspapers in America, I know, and most influential. At least that was their former capacity.
Right.
I don't know if they still are today or not. President Trump calls them the failing New York Times. But still, they're very prestigious news organizations, the New York Times, the Washington Post. What they're doing, this is my opinion, my take on this. Thank you for asking, Tim. You're welcome.
You can do what you want, Mr. President.
This is my take on this deal right here. This is the lengths that they will go to not credit President Trump. And secondly, this is the lengths they will go to not mention Islam with terrorism.
That's right.
Okay. This is what so what I'm saying is, with these headline writers at the Washington Post and at the New York Times, they say to themselves, how can we talk about the ISIS leader being taken out by American forces without mentioning that he's Muslim? Because we don't want to associate Islam with terrorist activity in any way. So how can we do that? Well, we just make it some bland, generic headline, right? About some guy, like, it's like an obit almost.
Yeah,
it's like your a community leader dies and
after an undisclosed illness.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So or sudden in this case, sudden. So it's just it's political correctness, in its most outrageous form, and it's also, again, second to that is not wanting to give President Trump any credit whatsoever in this matter.
Right.
Would you disagree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree with both of those. Did you find those?
I did.
This mockery of the Washington Post headline shows how, if you want to avoid talking about the real nature and character of a villain, this is how you do
it. Yeah, one guy named Jason Howerton, who writes for a couple of different news outlets, he said Mao Zedong, who saved 20 to 45 million of his own people from having to suffer through the struggle of existence, dies at 82. Another person
writes, what they're doing here is they're saying, for those who can't, these people are mocking the Washington Post headline because they're saying, what if you use the same logic that the Washington Post used on this guy, Baghdadi, you would have headlines such as this in history.
Right. Another one is Genghis Khan, noted traveler, dies at 64.
A noted traveler.
He killed millions, right?
Well, and conquered half of Europe. What, yeah. Didn't you have a Hitler one in there?
There was one about Hitler being an obscure painter, things of that sort.
Dies at 56.
There were some Harry Potter references and even one about Satan. So, yes.
You know, normally when this happens, a sitting president will get a 4 or 5 point bump.
Yeah.
At least temporarily. So this may happen with President.
Another reason why the Washington Post didn't want to.
Right, right. The news media, they're all in. I'm talking about the liberal news media. They're all in to defeating President Trump this go around, and they're not even trying to hide it. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issue.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, one of the days that we're in Israel on our March tour, we will be going to Bethlehem. And when we go to Bethlehem, we'll be visiting what's called the Church of the Nativity. And the Church of the Nativity is over the place where Jesus Christ was born. And so we're going to be seeing that very place and experiencing the place where Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem. And then later, we'll be seeing the shepherd's fields later that same day. So it's going to be a wonderful time. That's just one day in our trip to Israel. For more information on this March 12th through the 20th trip to the Holy Land, go to our website, twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starnes.
The only person more despised than a Trump supporter is someone who refuses to accept global warming as proven science. I believe God made the heavens and the earth, and I don't believe man has the power to destroy what God created. The Democrats would have you believe we are living in the last days. They say the hurricanes are getting worse, and so are the heat waves and the cold snaps. But the facts prove otherwise. For example, the worst hurricane on record happened in 1926, Miami, Florida. The worst snowstorm happened in 1888. The largest fire in American history happened in 1910. 3 million acres burned in northern Idaho and western Montana. And the most dangerous heat wave, 1911, killed more than 2,000 people in North America. By the way, the worst flood in history, as it was in the days of Noah. Read more at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, can ask Steve Jordahl about this at 11:05, but because Steve's a native of California. They got this wildfire issue again, yet again, going on in this time in Southern California. And what's amazing to me is they were showing satellite images. You could see this from space.
The fires?
Yeah.
That's massive.
Yeah. Well, the fires, but more specifically, the smoke that's going up into the atmosphere. I remember one time they had, this is probably 10 years ago, and there were fires in somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Of course, wildfires out west are that's just a way of life, right?
Right.
But still, they seem to be having. I was remembering about 10 years ago, there was a wildfires going on. I want to say in Wyoming or Montana or state of Washington, and the jet stream carried the smoke right through where we are in Northeast Mississippi, and carried it up through Kentucky and Ohio. I mean, it was really strange.
Huh.
But you could smell. I'm not kidding. You could smell smoke from. It may have been longer than 10 years ago. Am I the only one that remembers this?
I don't remember.
In Birmingham, we could smell a fire that was taking place somewhere in parts of Georgia, Florida Panhandle area.
Right.
Because people were like calling like the Birmingham Fire Department saying, "I smell smoke. There's a fire somewhere," and they're like, "No,
yeah.
it's just coming from some other state."
Yeah, but my story tops yours.
It sure
does.
Because
I'm talking a couple thousand miles here, Chris. You're talking a couple hundred miles here.
Yes, sir.
So I don't even know why you brought that up. In comparison to my story, I'm just
teasing. Yeah, I know.
I'm just teasing with I'm just teasing with Chris. People, don't email
me. Just keep sending those checks.
Don't email me.
I'll pick
don't
your
email me
if
and don't
I
text
have to.
Me and don't tell me how Tim needs to stop throwing.
Do you want your shirts pressed?
Throwing his weight around.
I'll restrap the parking lot.
All right. You'll do whatever it takes to keep your job, right, Chris?
Wait, you restripe the parking lot? Now I got to say, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Too bad I'm in radio.
All right, we have a guest now. Our guest is Luke Goodrich. Luke is an attorney at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, and he's also an author, right?
That's right. We want to talk to Luke about his book. It's a very timely subject, Free to Believe: The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. Luke has argued and won multiple cases at the Supreme Court, including the 2014 case Burwell versus Hobby Lobby, which was a major
win,
religious liberty case. Luke, welcome to Today's Issues.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Luke, we want to kind of have Chris Woodward just briefly mention a story. Now, this is from across the pond.
Yeah.
And then maybe if you want to just address where we're headed, if what's happened in the UK is actually something that Americans could be facing soon. Chris, talk about that story.
Yeah. Hey, Luke. It's Chris here. This was picked up by CBN News. There were other outlets as well. But there was a Christian doctor who claims he was sacked in Britain back in July of last year after he said he was, quote-unquote, interrogated by a superior over his religious beliefs. This gentleman actually, he believes in Genesis 1:27 that God created man and female. And in his image, he created man and female, things like that. A tribunal ruled against this doctor, saying that his biblical view of male and female violates human dignity. We had some interviews on American Family Radio programs featuring other organizations saying, you know, this kind of thing is going to spill over here. We're already seeing it in some areas. Are you familiar with this case? Do you think things like this would happen to Christians here in the U.S.?
Yeah, Chris, great question, and I hate to tell you, but we are already experiencing that here in the United States, and I'm representing Christian doctors right now because during the Obama administration, our own Department of Health and Human Services issued a new regulation under Obamacare saying that doctors in hospitals across the country would be required to perform gender transition procedures. These are like cross-sex hormones or removing a healthy uterus to help a woman transition to living as a man, that doctors and hospitals would be required to do these procedures or else they would be guilty of discrimination based on gender identity, and they'd be subject to losing Medicare and Medicaid funding and private lawsuits. So we challenged that regulation in court. And fortunately, we got a great victory a couple weeks ago. A judge said that regulation was unlawful, but that is absolutely the direction that many progressives are trying to take the law in this country and to force doctors to participate, even when it violates their religious beliefs and their own medical judgment, because a lot of these procedures can be harmful to the patients.
Luke, this is Tim Wildman. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Your new book is called Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. We encourage everybody to get a copy of this, Free to Believe. Give us an overview, if you would, of why you wrote this book.
Yeah, so I'm a Christian, and I've been working on religious freedom cases for over a decade at the Beckett Fund. I have four Supreme Court victories and lots of victories in lower courts. And I realized after doing this for a decade that a lot of Christians don't have a deep knowledge of religious freedom, and a lot of Christians aren't aware of what is coming in our culture. So I wrote Free to Believe really to answer three questions. Number one, why does religious freedom matter and where does it come from? And number two, how is religious freedom threatened in our culture today? What types of conflicts are we going to be seeing? And then number three, what can we as Christians do about it? What can we do to protect religious freedom? And I think one of the biggest needs I see among Christians, I think we often start thinking about religious freedom first and foremost as a political issue or a legal or constitutional issue, when in reality, religious freedom is a biblical issue and a theological issue. So I go back to scripture first and unpack where does religious freedom come from and why does it matter?
Well, Luke, let me just, and I know you've heard this argument. I'm sure you've been doing this for as long as you're talking about. I hear this a lot from, not a lot, but I do hear this argument, this reply from Christians whenever we talk about the loss of religious liberty. And they say, well, Jesus said we're going to be persecuted, so just give it up. This is just part of the Christian life. What would you say? How would you convince someone who has that argument about how important it is that we preserve religious liberty?
Yeah, I do hear that argument fairly often. And Jesus did say, blessed are you when people persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil because of me. Rejoice and be glad. And scripture does call us to rejoice in the midst of suffering and persecution. But that does not mean that persecution and violations of religious liberty are a good thing. And I go back to the book of Revelation, actually, where there's a picture in Revelation of the souls of people who have been slain for the sake of the gospel. And they're crying out to God, how long until you avenge our blood? And God eventually does avenge their blood. And what this is teaching us is that religious freedom is a basic issue of biblical justice. And when the government exceeds its God-given authority and interferes in the relationship between God and man, that's not the end of the world. Like the church is not going to die out because of this, but it is unjust. And because it is unjust, we as Christians are called to be people of justice and to oppose violations of religious liberty. So even though God can be glorified in the midst of suffering, he is also glorified. And we see throughout Scripture people of faith fighting for justice and fighting for government to remain within its God-given sphere of authority.
We're talking to Luke Goodrich. Luke, one more. I have one more question for you. Luke is the author of Free to Believe, The Battle over Religious Liberty in America. What we've seen in the last 5 years or so is, and there's more of this coming, and you talked about a case you have going on here, that is religious freedom versus sexual freedom. Those on the left want to argue, the so-called progressives, that the rights of people based on their sexual orientation, that overrules religious liberty. In other words, like we've seen with the bakery, the florist, the other
photographers,
a photographer, yeah. the other people, where they've said no. You can't use your religion to discriminate against people by denying them rights and services you would otherwise give somebody if they were heterosexual. So,
right.
How do you answer that argument or those conflicting, quote, rights?
Yeah, so that's a huge issue, and not only for florists and photographers and bakers, but right now, I'm representing a Christian ministry in the city of Philadelphia, and for over 100 years, this ministry has been recruiting families to provide loving homes for foster kids. And the city of Philadelphia recently decided that it was going to shut down that ministry because they don't place children in the homes of same-sex couples. So it's not just business owners, not providing goods and services for weddings. Now they're coming after Christian ministries as well. And I think in this area, it's very important to make the case, number one, this is not actually religious people discriminating. There's nothing against same-sex couples or same-sex, individuals with same-sex attraction. These are people who don't want to be forced by the government to participate in a same-sex marriage or a same-sex wedding. And there's a big difference there. But second, our country is deeply divided on matters of human sexuality and matters of religion. And even when the Supreme Court legalized, recognized same-sex marriages, it said that religious people who disagree with same-sex marriage are entitled to protection. And the fact of the matter is, given how divided our country is on questions of human sexuality, the government has no business taking one side of that debate, the same-sex marriage side, and then using its power to crush every Christian and every other person who disagrees. That in and of itself is discrimination against religious people. So the government needs to stay out of these issues. And, you know, it can let people, let same-sex couples live according to their beliefs, but it needs to let religious people live according to their beliefs as well. And the government shouldn't discriminate against Christians.
Where do we stand with that relative to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, we have two of those cases involving those adoption ministries. One case we won, the other case we lost, and so we're appealing that loss to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the court is going to decide in the next couple months whether it takes that case.
Yeah.
It's also got a case involving a florist, and we feel optimistic. I mean, we at Beckett, we've been around 25 years. We have a 90% win rate in all of our cases, and we're undefeated at the Supreme Court. You know, we won the Hobby Lobby case, and we think we have great arguments to make to allow traditional religious believers to carry out their businesses and their ministries in accordance with their religious beliefs.
Let me just make a point here, folks, too, because those of us who voted for President Trump, 3 years ago, 3 years ago? Yeah, 3 years ago. A lot of us were beaten up by our Christian brothers and sisters because they told us that, you know, you couldn't vote for a man who had been married three times and had said and done some things that were, incompatible with the Bible. How about that?
Right.
And certainly no one denied that. But you remember the pounding that of us took because we were compromising the gospel. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was completely unfair accusations, but I remember some of our brethren did that to us and saying we ought to sit out the election, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me just say something. The president, whoever he is, appoints federal judges and Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court justices are federal judges, but I'm talking about the federal appellate courts and other things. Those things are those judges are who people like our guest today, Luke, has to appear in front of and make oral arguments. If you got a bunch of flaming liberal federal judges, which Hillary Clinton would have appointed, and the Supreme Court would have been lost for a generation, Luke would have had no chance to win. I'm talking about our guest today, but I'm speaking our side, okay?
Right.
Because the other side would have been sold out to the ideology of, quote, progressivism. So, thank God that President Trump beat Hillary Clinton, okay? Even though the president sometimes fails to exhibit the fruits of the spirit, I would admit that, okay? But and I don't know if he's a believer or not,
right?
In his heart, only God knows that. But I'm just telling you, he says he's a Christian. But I'm just telling you, regardless of whether he's a Christian or not, does he believe in the Constitution as the president of the United States? And it doesn't matter to me whether he's a Christian. Don't mean to diminish that, but I'm just saying to you. Had Hillary Clinton won, our brothers and sisters who criticized us for voting for President Trump would have been left with a court system that would have been the deck would have been stacked against our friends like Luke and others who go to the court to battle for our side. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, Luke, there was my message. That's my sermon, even though it's Monday and I'm not a preacher. But anyway, Luke, listen, you have anything to say to what I just said other than you completely agree?
Yeah, I think the court system is extremely important. I mean, that's my workplace. I'm going there every day making these arguments, trying to protect religious freedom. And so it is essential to have people on the bench who interpret the Constitution as it's written. But the other point that I make in my book, Free to Believe, is that Christians you know, we have a lot to be thankful for in our country, a good legal system, good judges, and a lot of good rulings in these religious freedom cases. But as Christians, we're called to be people of hope, whether we live in North America or North Africa. And ultimately, our ultimate source of hope is not in the outcome of any particular election or the composition of the Supreme Court. We all know our hope is in a person, the risen person, Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And I go back to the book of John, where Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. And when it comes to religious freedom, we are going to have some trouble. There's a lot of cases right now and cases on the horizon. We can expect trouble. But Jesus also said in the very next breath, take heart. I have overcome the world. And so we as Christians place our hope ultimately in Jesus Christ. And that allows us to engage in these fights, the fights for religious liberty, the fights for our country. We can engage in those fights from a place of hope, mm-hmm. a place of joy, and pointing people ultimately to the gospel.
Amen. Thank you, Luke. We appreciate you being on. God bless you, brother, and your work.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Luke Goodrich, our guest. His book is titled Free to Believe, The Battle of Religious Liberty in America. And he is the lead attorney, I believe he is, at the Beckett yes. Fund for Religious Liberty.
I remember where I was when the Hobby Lobby ruling came down. I was on a family road trip with my family. I happened to be traveling through a portion of Arkansas at the time, and I popped up my phone and looked. I'm like, oh, you know, we got a ruling for Hobby Lobby.
Was that 5-4, though?
It was close.
I think that's right. I think it was 5-4.
Yeah.
Which that says a lot about how close we could have been to the kinds of things we started off talking about with Luke Goodrich that are happening. And he was right to point out the fact that this is happening. I'm glad he pointed it out, that it is already happening in the United States. So this battle that is being fought in legislatures and at the ballot box and in courts is extremely important. And for Christians to think it isn't, I just think it's naive.
And again, I can't overstate the importance of who appoints federal judges, because they're there for a lifetime, including Supreme Court nominees, the Supreme Court justices. So far, from everybody I talked to, including Abraham Hamilton III, who's a constitutional lawyer himself, who know about these things, and I know as much as you can know as a layman, and that is the president has done you have to grade him out an A+ in terms of his federal judiciary appointments so far, at least an A.
And that is keeping his promise. You don't get that a whole lot from politicians either.
Yeah. All right, next story, Chris.
Well, I want to mention this. It's a continuation of something we have discussed a few times on this program. There's this documentary out from Dennis Prager of Prager University. It's called No Safe Spaces, and it explores the issue of the fact that college campuses nowadays generally frown on anything involving free speech. If you're free, you're not free to believe on a college campus, depending on where you might go to university, as Fred would call it. And I bring this up because No Safe Spaces, it had a one-day-only special premiere event that's going to be kind of the groundwork for a broader release in the coming weeks. But No Safe Spaces, it was shown in Phoenix over the weekend. It raked in $45,000, and you think, whoa, that's not very much. Here's why it's a news story. That is the strongest. It's a strong opening, the second-highest ever box office gross for a documentary. Only the Michael Moore documentary Sicko has done better. That came out back in 2007. A sidebar issue with this is a young lady named Isabella Chow. She's a former Berkeley student, and she was on Fox and Friends today saying that she's been shunned for being included in the film for not supporting a anti-Trump resolution. Clip 13.
Essentially, I read a statement before I abstained, and I said, you know, I love you, but I can't really vote for this. And the week after, there was a giant protest where about 300 students crammed into the Senate meeting, and about 100 of them spoke. And over, they just said, why did you say that? Like, just resign. Yeah. And over the next few weeks, I was kicked out of every single club that I was part of on campus, except for the pro-life club and my church. It was just hard because people that I considered friends, people that I'd known since freshman year, you know, we're saying we're not going to affiliate with you anymore.
Right.
This why here, this right here is part of why AFA exists. You know, you have the freedom. You have the freedom to believe what you want. You have the freedom to say what you want within a certain realm, right? You can't say fire in a crowded theater. Everybody knows that. If this young lady's rights are going to be violated, if somebody loses their rights in the court of law, things like that, everything else is going to be set up like dominoes.
Right.
And all of a sudden, nobody's going to be able to say anything. This is why we talk about these things so much on this network and all the programs that we air.
Yeah, college campuses are just a foretaste of where these radicals would like to take us in every arena of life. They, in a sense, it's their laboratory. They are experimenting on college kids, and they're getting away with all these outrageous policies. And I believe these students are egged on by faculty members and professors and so on and so forth. And, of course, what's happening on college campuses has no parallel in terms of real life. You're not going to leave your, quote-unquote, safe spaces on college campuses and get your first job. And when your boss comes in to say, listen, you're not doing a good job on this project, I'd like to see a little more effort, what are you going to do? Say, excuse me, boss, but I'm feeling triggered right now. I'd like you to leave my office until you get a better attitude, because I don't... Are you going to do that, really?
You can say it once.
Yes.
Yeah. In most places.
Boss, I don't feel safe right now. Well, maybe you'll feel safer on the unemployment line because you're fired.
I'm just imagining, like, if I actually said that to Tim.
Oh, man, I don't feel safe. Would you go back outside your my office and start over?
Yeah.
Boss, well, this is a safe place in here.
Your aura is just throwing me off. Aura needs to be pink right now, and it's yellow.
It's got no relationship to real life.
Why not? Well, speaking of real life, there was a story out today. The Hill picked up on this, but there's a new poll out. I'm not sure who did the poll, but according to The Hill, 7 in 10 millennials support or favor socialism. God only knows what the Gen Z crowd's going to be into, the ones coming up behind us millennials.
I don't know. That just seems to me, you believe those numbers? 7 out of 10?
Yeah, I do, because I don't think they know what they're talking about. I think they're thinking big government. Millennials, I don't think they know what real socialism is. This same survey said 1 in 3 think that communism is okay. And this was a survey from Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Okay. They do this stuff regularly, and they question. And I'm hoping, maybe I'm the one who's naive.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the reason these numbers are so high is because millennials go, I want my college education, my debt paid for. I believe in big government. They think that's socialism.
Does everybody have a right to health care?
That kind of thing.
Does everybody have a right to food?
Yes.
Does everybody have a right to come to America? I mean,
that's what
who's
thinking.
With me? Okay, yes. Who's a human with a heart?
Right.
Raise your hand. You think it's that appeal?
That's what I think.
Okay.
I'm waiting on a poll. You know, millennials, we've talked about this, but millennials are people born in the early 80s to like the late 90s, okay? There's a big difference between someone like, I think at least, between someone like myself in his late 30s that's a millennial, and then somebody in the late 90s that's a millennial. At some point, I want to see some research on where...
There are people in their late 90s who are also millennials?
People born in the late 90s.
Oh, born
in the late 90s. I just think that millennials, you know, at some point, when you get out there in the real world, your values kind of change a little bit once you start paying the bills. And
You got Chris all shook up there.
No, I got tongue-tied. I'm poor communicator. Fred will be back tomorrow.
Well, I didn't know maybe if you couldn't now self-identify as a millennial.
Who are you to judge?
Be in your late 90s?
Be in your late 90s and say, I feel like I'm a millennial.
I'm a millennial.
I'm a self-identify.
You guys are triggering me.
You need a safe space, Chris? Well, then go back to your office.
Yes, sir.
Okay, across the street and get in your little...
And restripe the parking lot while you're on your way.
Yeah, change your attitude.
You want white or yellow?
we shall return. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Ed and I will return, and we will mock and abuse Steve Jordahl in a few minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.